I would like to call this meeting to order. This is the Economic Development, Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture Committee meeting for October. We are here October 1, 2024. Clerk Mahler, would you please call the roll?
Chair Sperry.
I'm present.
Deputy Chair Litt.
Here.
Legislator Clinton.
Here.
Legislator Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Stewart.
Here.
And Legislator Wall.
Here.
You have a full complement.
I love it.
Wow. The best.
Appreciate all of you. Legislator Litz, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
The honor to. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. And I just wanted to remind everybody on the meeting structure, priority is given to committee members for discussion and questions. Any additional resolution sponsors are also given priority, and it's up to the chair's discretion to open the meeting and conversation to non-members. I hope everybody's had a moment to review the September 3rd meeting minutes. And is there any discussion or questions on the minutes? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second. You got that? All in favor?
Aye.
Great. So I asked Executive Director Hillary Nichols from the Ulster County Industrial Development Agency to come in along with Chair Mike Hamm to give us an update on how things are going over at the IDA. So I'd like to give them a moment to give us a little presentation.
So Mike Hamm, Chairman of UCIDA, UCCRC. I want everybody to feel very comfortable knowing that they have a person like Hillary as the executive director over there. It's been a long time coming that we have someone that's so energetic, putting themselves out there, going different routes and taking different avenues to bring economic development back to Ulster County. She is constantly pounding the pavement. She goes above and beyond what actually her job title is, and she does a tremendous job. And behind you, you're going to see some of the fruits of her labor and what she's put into going on over at the IDA with this this new website. So, Hillary, take it away.
Thanks, Mike. This is a very nice intro. Is it okay if I come over? So I thought the best way to update everyone would to show off our new website. And although it appears to be done, the IDA is in the process of getting a new logo and branding strategy. We just happened to get the website done first. So things like the font and our logo and maybe some of the colors will change, but the layout is going to remain the same. So we'd love for you when you have a moment to take a look at our website, and I thought I would just briefly walk you through it. These are some pictures of a few active IDA projects. I am but one person, and so we'd like to get some better pictures, but we want to make sure that we're not stealing any photos. So as I get out there, we hope to update with some better pictures. And then we have our mission kind of coming through, again, learning more about the IDA. If you scroll down on our homepage, you'll see that we have an upcoming public hearing. And those have all gone out certified mail to the chair. So if you haven't gotten it or if it hasn't been passed around, I'm sure it will be shortly. And this is the IDA is proposing a change to our UTEP, which is the Uniform Tax Exempt Policy specific to housing. So we'd love for you, when you receive that, take a look at it, and we welcome any feedback on the 8th. So that is an area of the website where when public hearings are happening, you can check right on our homepage. Those will be posted. We've got like a success story section in here. This is featuring the Hudson House. I don't know if you're all familiar with it. And then 9W Corridor, it's a gorgeous project. They have a distillery there.
They've been able to leverage some other economic development funds to bring in better manufacturing equipment, which has actually increased their job number from what was projected before incentives were granted. And then over here is our second story, which is going to be RBW. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. That's kind of near the iPark campus. It's a they manufacture like high-end lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool stuff. If you have a chance to go in there, we just are finishing that up. And then again on our website, all of our meetings and hearings are posted here. You'll find our upcoming meetings. We have some committee meetings as well as a board meeting. And then as soon as the materials are ready to get posted publicly, they go there. You can find that on the homepage. But then if you know, want some light viewing, you can watch all of our great board meetings and committee meetings here. Not sure why that says coming soon, because they're definitely already coming gone. It's a new website. It's just so weird because I spent like 2 hours fixing this because we had some issues with them not being on here. So I don't know why these are not sticking because I just fixed it. But it is a new website. So as you're checking it out, if you find things, links that aren't working, please tell us. We have a great guy working on our website, and we want to get these things fixed, these little glitches, you know. So please let us know if you can't find anything. We're not hiding things. It's just a matter of being aware that something on the website is down. So, and then, you know, you can kind of learn more. All of our policies are on here. We did recently update, if you go to our homepage, you can find our application. We recently updated our application just to keep it in 2024 because we do look at living wage as a criteria for projects, and that number changes annually. So we wanted to make sure that all of the numbers on our application are 2024 numbers, so projects can be rated accordingly. So you can kind of find all of that. And then we also have our projects posted on here and some cool stats about the benefit that projects incentivized by the IDA bring to Ulster County. So you can kind of find that information. Again, as we build these numbers out, we plan to add more to the website. And if anyone has any questions, I know you're all very busy. I don't want to take up too much time, but questions on the website or anything. All right, so stay tuned for our new logo. As you can see up in the top, this is not my fave. If anyone had a hand in helping with this, I apologize, but it's very challenging for us to size this as well and keep that beautiful shape of our county when trying to size this. So we're very excited, and we look forward to our new logo. Some other just quick updates is we did put together a sustainable jobs task force, and we're going to be looking at, you know, how are we defining sustainable jobs, sustainable energy, renewables, all of these kinds of very popular catchphrases. We want to give, you know, some like a little meat on them, I guess, for lack of a better word, and really say, well, what are these jobs and what do we have for Ulster County to help attract these jobs here? And then look at all of that and say, so do the policies of the IDA incentivize what we want to see? So if we want to see, you know, companies that incentivize or do a really good job using clean energy, do we have the right policies in place to incentivize that? And so we're going to be looking at that. And I believe it's the 21st, whatever, the October, it's a Monday at 2:00. We're going to have a focus group. I'll be sending out invitations, which I'm sure you will see. So we'd love for one or two of you have an interest in this area for you to join our focus group and give us your feedback and thoughts on this area. And then, you know, again, as projects come forward, that will be posted, and we'll, of course, let Chair Sperry and Criswell know about projects that will be coming to the AVA. That's where we're at. Any questions?
Who's working on the website?
We have this guy, his name is Steve, and he runs Mid-Hudson Web. He's done a lot of other websites in the area and also did the Sullivan County Partnerships website. So he has some experience doing, you know, websites in the economic development field. So we put it out for quotes, and you know, it's very new, and I appreciate everyone's guidance. But what I didn't know was that IT and website development don't always go hand in hand. So we had a hard time getting businesses to quote us for the website and IT services, not realizing how different the two are. And he came back saying he'd be more than willing to do both, and it's really worked out. So we're very lucky in that respect.
I'd like to add that Jay Mahler is probably our best IT person.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear you're working with a local.
Yeah.
One other element about websites, since you brought up that division between IT and web, is that within web there's design and then there's also functionality and searchability.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody who can do all of that, that's great.
Yeah. And that's what, again, I realized that as great as it was for him to build this website, I am also not a marketing expert. And so as we started to create flyers and do different things, I realized that it's a lot harder than I thought. I was struggling with sizing our logo. And the board was kind enough to allow us to put out for RFP, just a small rebranding and logo. So we're also using a local company for that, Kingston Creative, and they've been really good at helping us streamline that process. I don't feel like it's all over the place, which is great, and we should have they plan to have the new logo to us by our next board meeting, which is the 16th. So
first of all, I just didn't want you to think I'm being rude. I'm actually looking at your website.
No, you're fine.
I was wondering if you could maybe give us a brief overview of your property acquisition policies.
That is a great question. So under policies, and I should know where all of these things are, so bear with me. So for lack of not being able to find it at this exact moment, we have numerous policies, and many of them are required by the ABO. So just to give some context, the Authority's Budget Office oversees IDAs, and they have a list of policies that we are required to have. And the property acquisition policy is one that is required by law, and our council is not here. I'm not an expert on it.
Well, I'm not a lawyer either. So
okay. Our IDA has not really historically acquired properties, but there are situations where IDAs can kind of take hold properties and help redevelop them. So the thing about IDAs is some of them have a lot of money because projects pay to come to the IDA. You can look at all of our financials are on our website, and you will see our IDA does not have a lot of money. So for IDAs that do have a lot of money, sometimes they will take on the business attraction component to that. And so if you own the parcel that you're trying to redevelop, it can be really helpful. And so that's a tool that IDAs have. It's not necessarily a tool that our IDA uses, if that helps.
Okay.
And then we also have a disposal policy as well that kind of goes hand in hand. So.
Great.
Thank you. I'm passionate about industrial hemp and increasing demand for industrial hemp for manufacturing and distribution, production. Do you have policies to incentivize that industry?
So all of the industries that are eligible would be eligible, whether they're hemp or whether they're making these things, are going to be eligible to come to the IDA. So as long as the project is eligible under the statute, it can come to the IDA. Now, where we could look closely, and hopefully that sustainable task force can do it, is looking at industries specific that we want to see come and what do they need to be successful. And so do our policies then mirror what those industries need?
The other thing about hemp, which I don't want to get too off topic, is that, you know, there's not a really good way for projects to borrow money to get these things off the ground because of
that. Cannabis or?
Well, so, Chris, you know that Cresco Labs, we incentivize Cresco Labs also.
But that's cannabis.
And that's cannabis, right? So I think what Hillary's driving at is the legalities as far as money goes with the banking reform.
I only interrupt just because sometimes people think cannabis is regulated like hemp, but it's part of the farm bill.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, the hemp, though, I don't see any no reason there's not an avenue for them to come to the IDA. As far as manufacturing, everything goes. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, jobs of the future, however you want to call it, these are things that our IDA is very focused on. I know we're trying to be a tool in the housing crisis, but at the end of the day, we're really trying to bring in high-paying industrial jobs. And so if you have ideas about what you'd love to see, I love hearing ideas. I get very excited about them. So be happy to pick your brain and see, you know, what we could do. If you have sites in mind, things like that, we're more than willing to listen and to be helpful.
I'll give you a call.
All right, great.
How is, I'm just curious, how's the new board doing? Is everybody getting into a groove? Like now that you guys have your different, you know, committees and stuff, I just wanted to know how it's going.
Yeah, I think I'm very thankful for the leadership that the chair has brought to the board. He's been excellent at making sure things run smoothly. All of our committees are working really well together. We haven't had any issues with committees not being able to meet, not getting quorum, things like that. Everyone has really done a good job of stepping up and volunteering to get the work done. So I really appreciate everyone's hard work and interviewing the candidates and reviewing everyone. I know I think people came in on a Saturday to get this done for us. And so far, it's been great. I'm really thankful. I think that they're all pretty brilliant too, which is great. No one misses a beat and they get it and they're getting the work done. So it's been phenomenal. So thank you. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming today, and we look forward to hearing from you guys soon.
Yeah, and I'll, you know, keep you posted as things move forward, and feel free to stop by any of our meetings if you'd like to learn more. All right.
Thank you.
All
right. Thanks, Hillary.
Great. Thank you.
All right, so we'll start with our resolutions on the agenda. Our first resolution is number 507, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to reallocate unused funds for economic development research and strategy. This resolution was sponsored by Legislator Hewitt, who I'm sure can momentarily speak to the resolution if there's questions. But basically, it repurposes $28,000 in vacancy savings. There was not a hire for the parks director that was budgeted for, and moves the money into the Department of Economic Development's professional services account. And it requires the Department of Economic Development to report to the committee within 60 days of adoption of the reso with an implementation plan to effectuate the appropriation as adopted by the legislature. And this is to explore the potentials of industrial hemp, to identify local nonprofits that can support industrial hemp, and to empower farmers to come to the table from the outset of the local industrial hemp movement. Are there any questions or is there any discussion? Legislator Litz.
Yeah. This is to fund a position or find a professional to...
It's to help the Economic Development Department create a plan, but not hire people.
Okay. Have you reached out to Deborah DeWan? Because that's her job.
I've been in talks with Kevin, Amanda, Jen, but I think that's a great idea.
I mean, she is our agricultural czar. I mean, it's her job to do exactly what you're asking this resolution to do, and when she's already on the payroll, we wouldn't have to pay the $28,000.
Well, my concern is I know of experts and innovators in the county who are approaching economic development and being told that there's no funding or interest in what they're doing. So I'm trying to help create a financial ability to support innovators, because I know there's innovation. We just don't have a plan. And so Deborah would be involved in the last resolve, creating a plan and get back to us on how to use that $28,000 to attract experts. One issue with our prohibition is we've lost our ability to make paper, textiles, fuels, fibers, because of the prohibition. But we have experts around the world who still know how to make it. So this could attract them with a conference, trade show. It's inspiring the economic development to do better with industrial hemp.
All right, can I say one thing? You know, that's a...
You have to be recognized by the chair.
There was people with their hands up before you.
Sorry about that.
Who was it, Eric?
Oh, no, actually.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I like the idea of this resolution where we're talking about funding new potential economic development strategies. I would like it better if it were hemp and other things. For example, the use of recyclable but often unrecycled or unused glass for things like road paving. I think there's several like projects that could really help and create an economy that would be worth looking at. And bringing in a separate person that could help with a range of innovation would, to me, be more desirable. I do like hemp, and executive director of Soil and Water, I think, should speak on this because of the connection with our efforts to promote farms and farming in Ulster County,
mm-hmm.
which the hemp industry would do and some of those others that I'm thinking of won't. So I would just pull apart a little bit for discussion what this position, if it were going to be an additional person, would do. I do think that the farming, the agriculture part of it is within Deborah DeWan's bailiwick. I'm not sure that this resolution is best, that this serves the county best by being only related to health or a farming initiative.
Legislator Litz?
Well, I'd much rather have Jake speak first, and then I'll speak after him.
Okay. Jake?
So, Chris, if you need growers, we could definitely talk with growers. We have great soils here. We have to get do continuing education credits and certified crop advisors. So I did take a couple of hemp classes, and we do have the equipment to help support that. And basically, I used to work for a dairy farm that had a hemp permit up in Maine, and that was a cash crop for them. So if you want to talk further, give me a call or stop in to track the growers. If there's a market, it could help out.
Thank you.
Do you want to say something, Amanda?
I would just add that, you know, I've had initial, this is a newer resolution, so we're just kind of getting eyes on it, have had some discussion with county executives as well as economic development, and we'd love an opportunity to kind of sit down and talk about perhaps there's other initiatives that this could kind of be considered within or alongside of. Rather than kind of a standalone RFP project, et cetera. And we would love to have that opportunity to talk it through some more.
Thanks. Legislator
Litz. My turn. Okay. I agree with Legislator Nolan in that this seems very sort of narrow focused only for one product, when I think there's a lot of innovation out there across the board. There's cellular concrete, you know, that should be looked into because it's a great, you know, insulator. It's non-toxic. It's non-flammable. All of those good things are in there, but we seem to be focusing just on one avenue of hemp and not a wide range of products that could do as well or maybe even better.
Legislator Hewitt.
I think the reason I singled out this, it's not one product, it's one plant. This one plant makes thousands of products. So there's nothing else really in the world that does that. And that's one reason it was made illegal. It was too much competition for cotton and petroleum plastics. So I think when we water it down, we're doing what the Reefer Madness movement did, trying to stigmatize one plant. When it's not a product, it's a plant that is selling products.
Just to fill on that, I see that like with dairy. Well, we say dairy. Well, dairy is milk. It's half and half. It's, you know, it's cheese. It's all these. So this is not just, you know, like you say, it's not just hemp. It goes into these other caveats.
Correct. It's like the cow.
Oh, but then you got to talk about beef.
Well, sure. Let's talk.
So, is there any motion on this resolution as is? Are there any feelings from the group? Thoughts?
I could support it as it is.
Okay. So is there a motion to approve this resolution?
Make the motion.
Okay. Is there? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
I think I'd like to see it expanded a little bit more. So I'm a no.
You're a no.
Not a full no. As far as I think the idea is valid, and I'd like to actually know a little bit more. But I'd also like to see how it can be maybe expanded and just like.
Before we vote it down, I also want to mention another intent. We wanted to hire a parks director in July. We didn't. That's $28,000 sitting around that we know we have. This doesn't affect our budget. And it's moving forward something that I think we're all in favor of moving forward. It's not making a plan. It's asking an economic development department to make a plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead.
I would just ask perhaps it could be considered a little further because even though it's you're citing vacancy savings, and you know, there are a lot of things kind of on the plate for economic development, and I think it's important to look at how it would be done, you know, to support perhaps other industries within, you know, maybe there is some other work that's being done on cannabis. Maybe there's a logical kind of bringing two topics together to issue an RFP. But again, you know, we're kind of new to reviewing this resolution, so we would really like the opportunity to kind of think through both staffing and programmatically how this would better fit with the work of the department.
Legislator Stewart?
I will say something much like the resolution in the previous meeting for energy and environment, the 24-hour recycling site. I think it's a great idea. As I think this is a great idea as well. I just think it needs to be fleshed out a little bit more, and especially in light of the comments that we have heard from Legislator Litz and Deputy Executive Laval. I think you're definitely onto something and something that I could definitely support, but I just think we need it, you know, a little more thought out, looked at more. So
I'll just put this out there. Would we be more comfortable removing the adoption of the resolution and then just motioning for a postponement so that we could all have a little bit more time to talk it over and think about it and put some more eyes on it?
That sounds good.
And I just also had a question for the sponsor. I was wondering, so would you be amenable to looking into other agricultural products as well, or you're really focused on the hemp and perhaps the cannabis?
I think if it could be grown locally at local farms, I'm open to anything that could do that.
Because one thing that comes to my mind, and it may be a total non sequitur, something that you don't have any interest in whatsoever, but back in the day, Ulster County was a huge producer of hemp, but it was also a huge producer of hops. And I think that might be another interesting thing to look at as well.
Yeah, nice. Thank you.
Easy to grow.
So would you guys, would anyone like to withdraw the motion to adopt the resolution?
That'll be your rich. I'll withdraw it.
I'll withdraw my second.
Okay. So is there a motion to postpone this resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks,
buddy.
Bye. Thank
you.
Take it easy.
I will. And she would be a great help, too. Yes, in fleshing the gap. Good.
Okay, resolution number 508, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $565,000 entered into by the County Medium Giant Company, DBA Medium Giant, Department of Tourism. This is a contract amendment with Medium Giant extending the term of agreement for an additional year. Is it 1/1/25 to, yes, for 1/1/25 to 12/31/25 for advertising and marketing services. This is the same amount as 2023. And we have Lisa here.
Questions? I didn't send my presentation. I neglected to send it to Hillary, but if you have questions, or I can just run through and tell you what my presentation says, which would you like me to do?
You can just,
So basically, this contract is for the company that has created our brand over the last almost 8 years, I think it is. And so really, what I wanted to talk to you guys today was about the 2023 I Love New York Tourism Economics Report and their key findings, because it was released by the state about 3 weeks ago, and I'm not sure that everybody had a chance to see that. And it directly has to do with the work that this ad agency does. So visitor spending generated a staggering $1.033 billion. In Ulster County in 2023. Right. It's the first time we ever broke the billion-dollar mark. And what's important for all of you to know is that 14% of Ulster County's workforce is employed in the tourism sector. So what's really impressive about that visitor spend number is that Westchester County brings in just over $2 million in visitor spending. Orange County brings in about 100 million more than we do. And Orange County has two of the biggest tourism attractions in the state. It has Woodbury Commons and it has Legoland. So Sullivan County brought in just around 900 million last year, but we dwarf Dutchess County, which brings in around $750 million. So all the rest of them go down from there. So the top three generators of visitor spending in the 10 county Hudson Valley / Catskills region are in this order: Westchester County, Orange County, and Ulster County. And
it didn't always used to be.
It did not. We were until about 4-5 years ago, we were habitually behind Dutchess County. Nipping at Orange County's heels is kind of incredible. But what you need to know is that the real number in there is that visitors spent $572 million in 2023 in accommodations, just in that sector. That's more than was spent than in Westchester County. They brought in $518 million. And so it's important for you guys to know that, because the occupancy tax was raised to 4%, right? And this is helping to fund other things that are very important to a whole lot of other people. And so their performance, the performance of our partnership with our ad agency, is really important, because really, and And you're going to get this. I'm going to send it all to you because it's so great. You should see these charts about our occupancy versus everybody else. I now have a tool where I'm able to gauge almost in real time what our occupancy looks like against our surrounding counties. And so far this year, I have data from January to August in Orange County, Dutchess County, and Sullivan County. Our occupancy rates are much, much higher. And what's important about this is the reason I'm focused on accommodation is because a lot of these counties, Orange County and Sullivan County in particular, beginning in April, they put money into the New York City market in TV advertising. If you watched Good Morning America, if you watched that CBS morning show, you were seeing their ads all over the place. Our occupancy was even with them in April, and by the time we got to June, July, and August, dwarfing them. Mm-hmm. So both our strategy and our creative with this group are paying off. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the message that I'm here to give to you today. You know, our Ulster County still represents 42% of all of tourism sales in the Catskill region. In terms of labor income, we lead the region with $425 million. So that's in the Catskills region. What you need to know about that number is the total amount of tourism labor is $531 million. So there you have it.
All of New York.
In the Catskills region.
In the 10 counties.
Not the 10. So the Catskills region is Sullivan, Ulster, Delaware, and green. For the purposes of this statewide report, the state thinks that Ulster County looks like more like the Catskill region than it does the Hudson Valley, like demographically. So they feel as though if they listed us in both places, it would be double counting for the state.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so they don't put us in the Hudson Valley.
Despite the fact that the Hudson River is there. Right. Yes.
So I had to break that part out. So I break that out. But so, you know, there were 8,420 jobs directly in tourism in 2023. And, you know, what we do know is that it's a significant employer. But more importantly, we have a lot of other objectives and goals in this county. And the work that we do with this particular ad agency is helping to make sure that we will make those occupancy tax projections. And I do also want to say that I did touch base with Ken Juris, because I get to a certain point always in the season, I'm worried. And I talked to him in August, and he said at the six-month point, we were slightly ahead, not wildly ahead, but slightly ahead. And so he had an expectation at that point that we were, barring something terrible, that we would meet occupancy tax. So I just want to tell you that. And I look forward to, like, giving you a much better and more interesting presentation of what we hope to do in 2025 when I meet with you guys at the end of October.
Perfect.
Okay. So that was my presentation.
And so can you just share that?
Happy to send it.
Yeah, so we can circulate it. I'd love to see it. Also, just curious, we're still the lowest in the surrounding counties for the occupancy rate.
So Greene County has zero.
Zero. But
Greene County has zero. Delaware has two. And Dutchess County has five. Orange County has five. Westchester, I want to say, has 4%, but I'm not 100%
mm-hmm.
sure.
Okay.
And Sullivan, I believe, is 5. So we're 1%
lower
than those. Than really the people who I look at, like, is who really do I think looks most like us?
Sure.
So,
yeah. Go ahead.
The $1 billion is just for me.
Yes.
Yeah, that's $40 million in sales tax.
Yeah.
The sales tax on that is huge.
Forget the occupancy tax, $40 million in sales tax. Besides, before you start adding occupancy tax in at $500 million.
Yeah. I know.
So, there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Actually, the department that really loves what we, that really, really loves what we do. So, you know, we feel like we're really lucky and we have great support. So I have to say that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Legislator Hewitt had his hand up.
Thank you. I just want to compliment you for the passion that you bring to the position and how much pride you have in these types of projects.
Thanks.
And I just have to mention that Medium Giant is owned by a Texas firm. I think you've made a good decision by working with them, but I wanted to mention the word Texas for Eric.
They are, and you know, Chris, it's so interesting because when Rick chose this firm by now 8 years ago, you know, people weren't working with national firms, and Westchester works with one of the biggest ad agencies in the country now, dedicated to tourism, and Orange County just made that switch. So, I know that they are based in Texas.
Legislator Stewart had his hand up.
I was just going to echo what Legislator Hewitt said. It's like, wow, bravo. I mean, that's amazing. And I just also wanted to make a comment in that I look forward to working with you about increasing tourism for Ulster County's amazing historical resources.
Yes, yes. And I do too. And yeah, and more to come when I sit down on the 29th.
Excellent.
About focus for 2025.
Wonderful.
Lisa, while we have you, I heard that Rocking Horse sold.
I've not heard that.
Somebody say yes at the end of the table. No, there's somebody behind you.
Yeah. So, their model really focused on the group market. And during COVID, it was totally destroyed. It's trying to come back, but it's going to be a long, hard slog with group. And a lot of like their groups were school groups and things like that. And their focus has changed about the things that they're doing and things that they want to do.
People want different experiences.
Yeah. And that makes me feel sad because they're terrific families and great hospitality providers. And is that your district? That's Platt.
It's yours.
That makes me feel sad. But
we beat them up pretty good.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, Dennis.
If I just wanted to on that last comment, I just want to say from a planning department standpoint, we are seeing more and more sort of lifestyle developments being here, starting with the one in Gardner, but we're also seeing being posed
Wildflower
for other places, which is essentially, come to the country and I call it the modern version of the
Little Colony.
But they're really, really great and really high end, and they're forcing a lot of the other resorts to essentially invest in others. The other thing I'd like to say is that we had a very, very brief conversation with Lisa about a year ago or so. And we asked, what would you think would look like a different type of way that we could talk about road safety, traffic safety programs? These folks put together a very, very interesting approach that wasn't sort of like an in-your-face kind of approach that you normally see with traffic safety. It was like, roll slow, be cool.
It was really good.
And they did it for free, and they gave a presentation to us and spent some time. And I just want to say that that's the caliber of individuals that you're working with. It's also the caliber of the department head in order to get that work done for us with a simple conversation. It was really great.
Great. Thank you so much. Yes.
Just out of curiosity, do we know what entity bought Rocking Horse Ranch?
I heard something.
No. Okay.
Maybe let them announce.
We'll see you later. It was me. I'm turning it into a film camp. Is there a motion to move this resolution forward? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Lisa, you'll be coming back at the end of the month, right?
Yes, I'll see you at the end of the month.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was that. This is such a good one, I believe. And I have 507 and 508. Isn't there every this? Okay, we have another resolution. No. Resolution number 553, adopting proposed local law number 9 of 2024, a local law providing real property tax exemption of the county portion of the real property taxation special ad valorem levies for the creation of the new accessory dwelling units in accordance with New York State Real Property Tax Law, Article 4, Title 2, Private Property, Section 421-P2. And you guys should have a handout that went around that looks like this to give you some more information. And Director Doyle is here if you have any questions.
So this would be countywide. You get the following accessory dwelling units. I tried to give you a sort of a cheat sheet on how the exemptions would work. It's only for the first $200,000 in value. I would say that from our perspective at the planning department, accessory dwelling units are one of the easiest ways that we can provide more housing units at a fairly reasonable price without a significant amount of community impact. We're seeing more and more communities essentially liberalize their ADU law. We're currently working with the state of New York and RUPCO on a $5 million round of funding for various communities of the county. We had in our first round of funding, which is about $1.7 million, if I recall, over 50, I would say closer to 70 applications, and we could fund 14 of them. So ADUs are popular, they're affordable, and they make our existing housing stock work harder with essentially little community impact associated with them. This is a little bit change in terms of the assessment practices so that we can make sure that we incentivize the additional creation of ADUs throughout the county. The city of Kingston has already adopted that law. There's been discussions with the city school district with respect to that law. It is a recent change to the state law with respect to allow this to occur. The law also provides that if you build an ADU, you can't use it for short-term rentals.
And you just read my mind on the past part. Mm-hmm. But what? How do you?
Yes.
How does that get?
I recognize you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How does that get policed though, and the enforcement of, like, so they get the break, they build it, and then how is that going to be able to ensure that this is actually helping the housing shortage as opposed to tourism and people coming up and renting for a week?
So from a lot of different, there's a lot of different eyes on short-term rentals, if that's a question back to that. So we'll see a lot of different eyes on short-term rentals. The county has a registry program. The county also uses a pop and fall for Anarchus, which basically scrubs the web for short-term rental applications.
Listings,
I'm sorry. And in addition, a lot of municipalities are requiring registration for short-term rentals. So some of these things end up being policed by neighbors. The neighbors start to see people there that aren't supposed to be there. There's complaints that go on. And if it is used for short-term rentals, the exemption ceases. I would also say that within most zoning statutes, the liberalization of the ADU policies essentially prohibit their use for short-term rentals. So it's not only in the law as it relates to exemption, it's also in the zoning statute with respect to use. The example I would give you, short-term rentals in ADUs in the city of Kingston are prohibited by statute. So that there's going to be an enforcement not only on the assessment side, but also on the zoning side within the city of Kingston. Same is true in other communities as well, where ADUs are permitted and been liberalized, but essentially they've been prohibited to be used for short-term rentals.
Legislator Hewitt?
Does that pertain to after the building sells? to the next owner? Does it have to stay not short-term rental?
The exemption does, and clearly the zoning statute would. So the answer I would give you would be yes.
Legislator Litz.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to make a motion to send this back to the Human Services and Housing Committee, because I made a suggestion to them that I thought they were going to include in this resolution. I mean, it states in Section 1 of the law that it revealed that insufficient inventory of homes at an affordable price point, and that 20% of the renter households and 14% of the owner household spend more than half of their income on housing costs, confirming that the housing represented a cost burden that is unattainable for many Ulster County residents. I asked them that in the area of the applicability section, that they add the words that, you know, the exemption period of 5 years, 100, blah, 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 for newly created and affordable rental residential units. And then in C also again, and several areas throughout this law, they should add the words, you know, a local permitting authority for the creation of the affordable accessory dwelling unit and or affordable accessory apartment receive occupancy permit, and it goes on and on and on. I mean, the whole purpose, you know, we added an occupancy tax in this county. We increased it, we doubled it to afford a percentage, 25% of that goes towards affordable housing. And we talk about affordable housing and affordable housing and affordable housing. And then now we're going to pass a resolution that allows people to put an accessory dwelling unit. They can take up to $200,000 off their construction costs. Yet nowhere in here do we make it for affordable housing. I think we should send it, my opinion, I made the motion to send it back to committee and make this law applicable for their exemption of county portion of the real taxation for the creation of affordable housing accessory units.
So we can't send it back to them because it's not going to them until Thursday. So it's coming to us first. So if you want to make amendments to it, we can make amendments and then pass it as amended.
Or I'll make a motion to postpone it.
Okay.
And then that gives them the opportunity.
And it stays in this committee. You meet before health. If it doesn't leave here, it doesn't go to health.
And when do they meet?
Thursday.
Good. When they hear it's postponed and for what reasons we postponed it, they can talk about it on Thursday and make their amendments to it. But that's where it came from.
You can also amend it, though,
well,
in this committee.
I didn't go through every place that I need to change the wording. But I could do that.
Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to ask a question as to which would be preferable. It almost seems like maybe we should look into amending that if possible. Because I agree with your point. I accept. I think it's a great idea.
It's just the.
Go ahead.
Is it just the addition of the word affordable?
Yeah.
Yes. You could even put it in the title. Creation of new affordable accessory dwelling units.
I will.
And then you can put it several places. It talks about creation of residential units. It should be the creation of affordable rental units.
Legislator Corcoran.
So you're saying that the tax exemption could come in only under affordable?
I know.
And
you would get the reduction, the exemption for building an accessory unit that is affordable.
All right, so then that's going to have to be defined, and then that's going to have to be policed.
Usually,
and how's the assessor going to police the pricing of the rental unit? This is an assessor nightmare.
right? Because she's hating it already. I've already been yelled at.
I would say that's one of the reasons that we didn't have a conversation with respect to this local law in terms of the use of, in terms of doing affordability had to do with some of the issues associated with policing. I would also tell you that in some communities, not all, but in some communities, they do require that in the county planning department, with the county planning board, with its respect to reviews of accessory dwelling unit statutes, have issued opinions that that the liberalization of accessory dwelling units should come within an affordability issue, and that's 80%. I would also say that if you're going to think about changes to the statute as written, you may need to think about whether they're substantial or not substantial. If they are substantial, then they would have to go back to public hearing.
Mm-hmm. Legislator Stewart.
So would specifying affordability as 80% AMI, would that require to go back?
You're asking a question. I'm not an attorney. That would be
true.
Substantial.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Chair.
No,
the only other thing I would say is just that in general, accessory dwelling units are affordable as compared to other types of units, mainly because of the cost of their development, their size as well. And given what we're seeing at 80% AMI in terms of what affordable rents are on the 80% AMI side, they are substantially more than market rates. So you're probably looking, I'd have to run the numbers, but you're probably looking at for 1 and 2 bedroom, you're probably looking at anywhere between $1,400 to $1,700 a month. That would be considered an affordable rent. The city of Kingston's running into this right now with respect to affordability. So I'm not sure how much of a difference it would make in terms of the rents that would actually be charged. But the legislature is correct. It would be a regulated rent versus a non-regulated rent.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. The chief clerk keeps emphasizing that we can make amendments without going back to public hearing. So I'm not sure that I fully understand that, but I just want to say it, not because I want to amend this, but that I think we might be able to. I just was going to emphasize the point that at least so far, the ADUs that we have in my district are all very low priced compared to what they are, and it's because they often are family members that are using them.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they're not, they're like college students, or it just seems that having built these things right next to your home, basically, there's a kind of community aspect to it that is the fact on the ground. And if that serves to protect the affordable nature of this better than changes in the law, especially given how high the rents are, so that you have to get down to a very low percentage of AMI. And then I think it takes away a little bit of the, it potentially takes away a little bit of the idea that these are a good thing. So it's I think this is very complicated, because I think we're all of the opinion that these shouldn't be used for high rent. But to legislate it may do more damage than the good that we're trying to accomplish with those changes.
I wonder if we might just consider amending it to read affordable as Legislator Litz originally stated without actually defining that, or is that kind of goes against our
I don't know if we can do that.
Yeah.
Do you have a follow-up to that directly?
At that point, I'm not a lawyer, but we have lots of lawyers and we can ask them. We can do it. It would leave it open to challenge, because people would say, I'm doing it.
What do you mean by a rule?
Yes.
Legislator Litz.
The amount of the exemption is limited to $200,000. Most people, if they spend $200,000, which is more than I spent when I built my house, if you spend $200,000 putting an addition on your house, you're going to want to get as much money as you can to recoup that money. I don't see a problem with putting the word affordable in there. I don't see a problem with putting a definition here. Affordable is considered 80% AMI. I mean, we've done this several times on several different laws, equating what the definition is to what we want and leaving this wide open to anyone's interpretation. I mean, let's face it, if I spend $200,000 putting an addition on my house, I'm going to try to get $2,400 a month for that apartment. And you can probably get it because people will pay that because of the lack of housing stock and rental units in this county. But if we stipulate in this law, listen, a guy can spend $1 million putting renovations on and rent them for $8,000 a month. That's fine. That's a business decision on him. But if we're going to give up our tax money to the county and not get what we're looking for, which is affordable housing, I think we're selling ourselves short.
Dr. Doyle?
So I take the point that affordable is something that we've strived for. I think we also should take the point that we're also striving for housing production. And incentivizing housing production is not always looking at this as everything has to be, quote, affordable. The other thing I would say to you is the city of Kingston, which has been a leader with respect to affordable housing, to the best of my knowledge, their statute, they've adopted it, does not require affordability for accessory dwelling units. I have to check in whether their zoning statute does, but I know that their assessment statute doesn't. If we head in this direction, then I think that you, number one is that you're going to have some way to monitor it. A, B is you're going to have a lease that you can deal with, and then C is the law should require something with respect to a certification when you apply for the exemption. So there's some mechanics that you would think about adding into the law if you're going to require affordability. I would say that we had this discussion at the planning department when we looked at this. We had some of this discussion with the executive staff, and some of those problems that arose with respect to doing this on a countywide basis came to the fore. Also, some concerns with respect to from the assessors that have expressed concern. The thought was is we wanted to incentivize the creation of ADUs and let the communities think about if they're going to allow ADUs, whether or not they had to be affordable or not. So let the communities make that choice with respect to affordability, which some have done in their zoning statutes.
So I will just remind everybody that this is meant to go to Health and Human Services, and then Laws and Rules, and then Ways and Means. So it has a few other stops. And also, you know, a lot of what's in here is state-initiated language, and I'm not sure how much we can change because of the state. Go ahead, Herb.
We can go more restrictive, but we cannot eliminate the law because it's a state law.
Correct.
But
we could also, as Dennis was saying, like give the municipalities the power to be more.
This is one of the only times I've ever heard anybody say that a municipality can make decisions about county money, because this tax is not their tax. This is a reduction in county tax, and I'm very surprised that we're going to allow towns and villages and cities to make decisions on county tax money. it's a rare occurrence.
I just better know, Lynn.
The Times Union reports that the Kingston Law is dealing with newer converted rental properties with at least 10 units, offers these kinds of exemptions if at least a quarter of the units are affordable to households earning between 60 and 80% of area medium income.
That's a different statute. There's two 421Ps. One is 421P that applies to multifamily dwellings, and one is 421P-2, which applies only to accessory dwelling units. So the city adopted both of them. One of them had to do with essentially multifamily units, and the other one had to do with ADUs. So
you think this qualification is only for the multifamily?
My understanding is essentially when we looked at this statute, we almost, with some changes we made, we almost used the city statute as a model. The one you're looking at has to deal with multifamily units, that's why it says more than 10 units, mm-hmm. there might be 7 yeah. units, whatever it says, and this is only deals with ADUs.
This news story addresses both, and it wasn't clear to me from the news story whether this did apply to both types of
objection. We looked at presenting to the legislature the exemption for multifamily units and decided that we would do that at this particular point in time.
So a question for me would be, what would it cost us to try to do it the way that mandates affordability? Because I'm inclined, I like that suggestion. We want the affordability, and so there's an inclination to say, well, let's require it. In this case, it's an open question to me whether the types of structures we'd have to put in place to police it would cost more than we say than would achieve this end. So this might be a place to let the market handle it. We could go back in 3 years or 5 years and revisit this if we think that there's been too much high-end ADU building. We haven't seen that even before we offered this. And so offering this exemption might shift things in a direction that's not good. We think it could help continue the trend towards doing more of this. So I could be persuaded by the housing group and the health committee to leave it as it is. And if they have these same concerns and go a different direction, then they can pull it back instead of pulling it back from this committee.
I agree. Anybody want to make a motion to adopt the resolution as presented?
There's still a motion on the floor.
What is it?
I made a motion.
You made a motion to refer it back to health, and calling
and
that.
And then I said, but I don't
you
think
made that motion?
Was, yes.
Well, I don't think it was seconded.
And then there was probably no second. Okay.
So
you can entertain a new motion then.
I'll make a motion.
Oh, my God.
Move the rest.
I haven't gotten my Herbie's Rules of Order.
Yeah, I didn't get that copy either. I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
I'm going to refer on this. I'm going to oppose.
Okay, so all in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Okay.
Adopted.
Thank you.
Did 4-3?
Yes. Yes. So that was our last resolution on the agenda. I just wanted to remind everybody of our upcoming meetings. We have a special meeting on Monday, October. Legislator Stewart.
I was just wondering, since we have Director Doyle here, if I could ask a question relating to short-term rentals.
Do you have to ask it right now?
I could do this perhaps offline if you would prefer.
Great. We have a special meeting on Monday, October 28th at 6 p.m. for the 2025 budget discussion, and this is to discuss the executive proposed 2025 budget amongst ourselves with the department heads. All members have RSVP'd that they can attend. Also, I just wanted to bring to your attention, and for the new members of this committee, a decision on the Cornell Cooperative Extension Soil and Water Conservation District and library funding requests will be made at the committee's regular December 3rd meeting and voted on by the legislature at the December 17th regular meeting. The annual funding allocation for these organizations is not part of the 2025 budget process. As a reminder to some of the, to some and information for new legislators, the allocation for these three organizations comes out of the legislature's budget. The total amount in that bucket is determined by Ways and Means, the Ways and Means Committee in May. The 2025 number is $919,250, which was the same as 2024. The balance in the bucket after funding CCE, SWCD, and the libraries is to be used for the arts, including the Arts Mid-Hudson contract. Any increase in funding to the three contract agencies will decrease the balance. And for everyone's consideration while evaluating the presentations and funding requests last month and in August. Our regular meeting has been moved to Thursday, November 7th because Election Day. And I want to remind everybody to vote. Get your pretty pink sticker. So voting on November 5th, early voting starts October 26th, and we are aware that Legislator Litz and Legislator Clinton are not available that evening. We do have one bullet point of new business, which is Jake, who sent us an email regarding the Climate Resilient Farming Grant, and Jake is here with us to give us an update.
First of all, thank you to Legislator Nolan and Legislator Litz. They're on our board. They helped us with the ARPA funding. Same thing with Kevin Lynch and Deborah DeWan putting together the contract. We were awarded $166,400 for Climate Resilient Farming Round 8. So we started with Round 6. That was the first one we applied for. Seven, we got that funding, so 6, 7, and 8. So we have three contracts. We're going to put in an additional 340 acres of cover crops per year. Also 56 acres in mulching, roll mulching at least, and that's going to reduce soil erosion and herbicide use. And the grant's going to be used to pay for half of the 12-foot no-till drill and for half of the row mulchers. We're expanding our soil health equipment available to all Ulster County farmers. We're very excited. And a special thanks to Travis Ferry. He's our technician. I mean, we worked together, but I'd say he did 70% of the grant proposal. We're the only conservation district in the Hudson Valley region that was awarded. It was very competitive. So thanks to Travis for doing his good work. And it's a pleasure to report this. Very pleased with this.
Yeah. You know, off the top of your head now, so this is three rounds that we're getting the grant for. So how much have we gotten in total? You said five, six,
seven, I'd say total close to 500,000.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
No, and we're state funding.
That's great.
So we've applied for three rounds and we were awarded three rounds. First round helped us with the no-till drill and cover crops. The second round, that's round seven, we got two irrigation projects funded through that. And then the third round is more cover crops and more equipment.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Jake, for coming to deliver the good news. Old business. So you guys got some emails. Legislator Stewart?
I was going to see if I could ask that question regarding short-term rentals as part of new business.
Please.
Awesome. Thank you. Director Doyle, while we have you here, one thing that I've been working on are reports from the comptroller
Last year, it was reported to the legislature that $600,000 in uncollected fines for owners of short-term rentals not registering with the county to pay bed tax. And I touched base with Comptroller Gallagher a few months ago, and that number had risen to over $900,000 in penalties. People who do not register with the county for short-term rentals are subject to a fine of up to $1,000. So there are significant numbers of people who own short-term rentals who have not registered with the county and therefore are subject to these fines. And now that number is over $900,000. And I had mentioned this to the county executive a few weeks ago, and she said that, and I had inquired to her as to, you know, does the legislature need to provide more money to the Department of Finance, who's in charge of enforcement of these regulations, or do we need to take that enforcement capability and put it some other department who would be better able to do so? And the county executive's response was, well, what we want to do is we want to send out letters to these people who are not in compliance with these county regulations before we consider doing anything. And I was just curious as to if you had any idea as to when these letters might go out. I was just concerned that since, you know, we're entering into the budget season, that another month or two or three could pass before these letters go out. And it seems like, you know, $900,000 could go a long way to assisting the county in addressing our housing crisis.
So I am going to give you a classic bureaucratic answer for it. This program is handled through the finance department. I know that the finance department, I think, had conversations with the legislature about expanding the contract with Granicus, which is the firm that we use to essentially validate short-term rental work or not work.
Which is what they told us last year.
I don't know where that stands or doesn't stand, but I really don't have any sort of handle on where that is or isn't. But I take the sense that there's a substantial amount of money that may or may not be available with respect to this. I would say this, that we have encouraged municipalities to pass short-term rental statutes in their zoning statute and require registration at a town level. And also with respect to that registration, require that before that they can get a license to operate at a town level, they must register with Ulster County.
Right.
So several towns have done that, several towns have not. For me, that's one of the ways that sort of create partnerships with respect to this, that you get more and more cooperation and more, sense that your statutes are being followed if you can get the communities involved as well. So that's one of the things that I would offer. And we make those recommendations regularly when towns amend their zoning statute. Does that help or not really? But what's the best I can do?
Well, thank you.
I would want to add something that we're considering as a late resolution. The Congress passed something called CDIs, affectionately known as earmarks. The county of Ulster was granted an earmark of $1 million for the Ulster Golden Hill Affordable Housing Project. We're not developing the Affordable Housing Project. Obviously, Penrose is. So we've seen some of the contracts coming out of HUD money, it's Housing and Urban Development Funding. We've seen some of the contracts coming out from that funding. And we're currently in discussions about being able to use that money. Penrose has two offsite improvements that they have to make. One has to do with the water treatment facilities, not the treatment facilities, the water station and pumping facilities in the city of Kingston, and the other one has to do with our signal on the end of Golden Hill Drive, which we're in the process of completing the design for. that may require some technical amendments to the grant as it's currently written. The other thing that I want the legislature to understand is now we are introducing federal money into a project which introduces issues associated with NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Review Act. So we're in discussions about how best to do that. So we can't change the way the project currently is because all of our choices have been made and the project's under construction. So the technical amendment would be to think about trying to either A, allow the grant as it's written broadly to be used for the signal and for the water treatment, the water facilities, and or do a technical amendment which would require reappropriation from Congress. What you may see from us as a late resolution is an authorization to enter into that contract. Why do we want to do that? What it's going to do is allow the planning director, if it passes and we decide to introduce it, to become the certifying officer with respect to NEPA. One of the reasons we want to do that is that we have to do an EA, environmental assessment, with respect to the signal. The water facility under HUD's rules would essentially be categorically excluded. I know this gets wonky on you, and I apologize. But if we don't do that, then what ends up happening is that in order for us to meet the timetable for the signal to be in place by the time the housing facility is finished, we're going to run into serious difficulties associated with the lead time for some of the signal components that we have to order. So the thought being is we may come to you and say, here's a contract. It may or may not be the contract that we actually signed, but it'll allow us to essentially do the NEPA work associated with that. If we complete NEPA, then we can go ahead and build it and get the money later, right? So just I want you to think about that. Penrose is going to pay for the water facility, and they're into us for, I think what the email was somewhere in the neighborhood, and you had asked this in the past, for $300,000 of the signal facility, all right? The current engineering estimates for that facility is greater than that. I don't want to give the number away for obvious reasons. We haven't bid it yet. But if you see something as a late resolution coming through, just be aware that that's what it's about. And we'll be happy to sit down with any legislature or committee to explain it in further detail. It's complicated. It's not necessarily set in stone. And we're in current discussions trying to get further answers from HUD in terms of how this would work. The danger being is if we have to do a technical amendment, the likelihood of getting reappropriations through the Congress in terms of this election season is probably very limited. So probably the earliest this gets taken up is sometime after January, probably into March, assuming that that's where we're at.
This grant money will be used to pay things that Pemrose was required work for their job, right?
So there's a yes and no to that. The water system was required by the city planning department, and Penrose is required to make those necessary improvements. It also improves access to the county's water supply system on Bear Hill. So it's a general improvement, but Penrose was essentially, as part of their approvals, required to make those approvals to the city water system.
So if we use this grant money to pay for that, then that's a windfall profit to Penrose, isn't it?
Actually, the short answer is no. It becomes in terms of their drawdown of tax credits gets reduced. So they never make. It's difficult to under. I should say it's difficult. It's complicated to understand. But what ends up happening is the state does not allow for that. They have a certain fee that they can charge. That's all they can charge. It's a question of where the money comes from versus effectively. Not how much money they get. Does that make sense, Herb?
Yeah, it does. But to the general voter, it sounds like we're paying for work that Pemrose is supposed to do. So it's like the favorite child thing. And as far as the signal goes, if our portion of that is $300,000,
No, that was Penrose's portion. Our portion will be less than that.
Okay. I don't have a problem for the grant paying for our portion, but I don't want to pay for the signal and have Penrose come off not paying their fair share that they were required to by contract.
Yeah, we've had this conversation on several different levels with respect to the capital stack that's available for Penrose. And effectively what ends up happening is the explanation that you'll get and I'll give you is effectively it means that they'll draw down less than other portions of their capital stack. It's not money that effectively goes to the Penrose's pocket. It just changes the drawdown in the capital stack. The state of New York, in terms of low-income housing tax credits, is more than happy to use other money rather than their low-income tax credits because they only have so many of them.
Legislator Stewart, you had your hand up before.
I had a question not related to this issue, but a clarification I wanted to ask of you. Earlier, you had mentioned that funding for the Cornell Soil and Water and the libraries would be presented in December, you said, correct?
That's when we're voting on the resolution.
So, but my question was, does increased funding to Cornell Soil and Water or libraries, does that take funding away from the arts and cultural initiative? No.
Well, so that bucket is set by Ways and Means in May, and then we get the presentations from those entities asking for an increase or whatever, and then whatever's left over between the three entities is what we give to the arts.
So if we were to increase funding to any or all three of those entities, it would decrease the funding going
to
the arts
right.
initiative
yes.
that is being put forward by the chair of the legislature.
Well, that's a question because we don't know what we know that there's a study being done right now. We don't know what that study is going to say, and we don't know what is going to be asked, but we have in the past used that money and put it towards the Arts Mid-Hudson contract, which is $80,000. And then beyond that $80,000, we put into other arts initiatives.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Legislator Litz.
We know what the asks are because they already made their presentations in August.
Mm-hmm.
What's left in the till after their asks?
Like 50 with the $80,000. Yeah. So with all of those asks and funding the Arts Mid-Hudson contract, I believe it was estimated that there was like a 50-ish something grand left over, and then out of that, $919,000.
Okay. So there's only
there's money left.
There's $50,000 left after the three asks from the three agencies and funding the Arts Mid-Hudson contract as we have in the past.
58.
Yeah, it was like 54 or 58.
That seems like a surprisingly small amount of money, but I get it. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can I move on to old business? So we have, they should have been emailed to you last week, I believe it was. There was invitations to two Cornell Cooperative Extension events. One is an October 8th watershed tour for elected officials that will be from 2:30 to 5 p.m. And then the other one is their first, I think it is, inaugural Cornell Cooperative Extension showcase at the Ashokan Center on November 1st, 2:30 to 7 p.m. I just wanted to give a shout out to Cornell Cooperative Extension Executive Director Melanie Forstrom, who couldn't be here tonight because she's traveling back from Alaska, but I do know she live streamed because she texted me and said I ran a good meeting. I know it's up for debate. And she also did send us Jay and I, beautiful photos of the northern lights that she saw.
That's cool.
So thank you for tuning in, Melanie, and I hope to see you guys at both of those events.
I believe Legislator Litz and I are going to the tour of the watershed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think there's a few people going to both.
Come on down to my district.
Yay, okay.
Or it's up, isn't it?
Oh, I just heard a motion to adjourn the meeting. Is there a second? Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll abstain.